I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to Eye on the Community. I'm Vicki Pepper. Perhaps you've seen the new Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma, which takes aim at social media, revealing why Twitter, Facebook, and the like are having a profound effect on our mental health. 2020 has seen the world encounter one crisis after another, with populations becoming ever more politically divided, and things generally just seem to teeter on the edge of oblivion. And according to Netflix's The Social Dilemma, the problem, at least in part, is social media and the tech industry. Joining me today is Dr. Carol Lieber, a board-certified psychiatrist with a master's in public health, to analyze why this is. Thank you so much for talking with me today, Dr. Lieberman.
You're very welcome.
What's your reaction to the social dilemma and the revelations that Facebook and Twitter are harming people's mental health?
This film, it was absolutely gripping, and it should be required watching in middle school and high school and pretty much for every adult as well. It was very powerful because it combined interviews of people who were the very people, you know, top of the chain in all of these different social media platforms. And they have now come out calling themselves, or they have been called, conscientious defectors, because they are so concerned and upset about the very things that they themselves created. And in addition to that, so that makes the whole thing, you know, very powerful, real. You know, you can see in them, in their interviews, they wish they had never done that. And then that gets interspersed with dramatizations of a family with two teen, preteen kids, and showing some of the impact, the psychological impact of using social media. So, for example, the boy, his mother said that if he stayed off his phone for 24 hours, that she would get him a new screen. The screen on his phone had broken, and he couldn't do it. And the girl was, you know, obsessed with taking selfies of herself and getting likes and getting, oh, you're beautiful. But then she would also get criticisms about her ears. And then that would, you know, you could just tell her self-esteem was even more damaged forever. So these things are so true, and it really brings it home.
How do you think that social media has changed the way people interact with each other and develop relationships with each other?
Well, first of all, it shows how these social media platforms, you know, it's not a coincidence, or they didn't just come up with things haphazardly. They have so many engineers working on these things. And so, for example, with in terms of relationships, well, they want to do three things. They want you to spend more time on social media so that you get addicted to it. And one of the ways that they do that is by having things like likes and hearts. And you get so addicted to having people like you, you keep checking how many likes you have, or hearts or anything like that, or comments. And then the next thing is getting friends involved. They want you to get to invite people onto your different platforms. And then the last thing is to convey a message. Now, we know, we more or less are aware that we are being sold to advertisers, that these things aren't free, that, you know, they get more, the social media platforms are paid for by advertisers, depending upon how many likes that or how many clicks they got on their ads and so on. But that's not as bad as how we're also being sold to beliefs. That was the scariest part of all of this. Besides the addiction and the shallow social relationships, you know, based on likes and so on. The scariest part, and I think this is why the people who are interviewed and who have come out against social media, what scares them the most is the fake news, is how people are being not just sold to advertisers, but convinced of certain ideas based upon what a government wants you to believe, or a company or a person, or, I mean, whole they give examples of countries that have been influenced by things on social media, things that aren't necessarily true, but that it serves some dictator to get you to believe.
And how do you think the way information flows in social media deviates from the way it did in previous traditional societies?
We used to talk to each other more. And information would be passed on from friend to friend or coworker, and we'd have a chance to get various opinions about subjects. But when we look on social media, it is the opinion that the advertiser or that the the person who is putting up the posts want you to believe, and you don't have anyone. I mean, that's part of the thing. When they get you addicted and isolated, you don't have anyone to talk to about, well, what do you think about that idea?
I'm speaking with Dr. Carol Lieberman, a board-certified psychiatrist with a master's in public health, about the new Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma, and what that means for our mental health. Dr. Lieberman, what do you think are some of the short and long-term effects of people reducing their face-to-face interactions with friends as a result of excessive phone use?
Very bad. We are, in the film, it shows as an example, and people can really relate to this, a family sitting around the dinner table, and everybody has their phone, and nobody's talking to each other, and we all see this. Well, when we used to go to restaurants, we see that in restaurants, you know, whether it's whatever kind of group, we would see people sitting at having a meal together. It doesn't have to just be a family, you know, or live with each other, but any kind of groups, people are so distracted looking at their phone and really not interacting on a deeper level, on an intimate level, the way we used to. And instead of, and especially now, you know, it's, this whole thing is getting worse because of the lockdowns and isolation of COVID, we are losing our comfort. We're feeling more awkward being with people, even our friends. And so when you actually communicate with another person, you can get hurt. I mean, you know, they could say something you don't like, or they could not give you credit, or they could not react to you in a way that you like. You can get slighted very easily. Whereas on social media, it's not real as this face-to-face interaction, but you can judge it by how many likes you get. It's really scary that we're losing this ease with which we have intimate relationships. And I mean intimate, not only, I don't mean just sexual or love, romance relationships, but close friends and close family. We're losing that, and we're opening the door to spending more time on social media.
One of the most striking notes that I got from the film was when they said that the only companies that call their customers users are drug dealers and social media. Dr. Lieberman, how do strong social bonds form among individuals and communities, and how does this bonding change when it's done through email and phones and Skype, et cetera?
Well, bonds in real life, you know, you have to feel the person. I mean, you have to, like when you're in a room, I mean, even for example, as a psychiatrist, I do, I'm continuing to have therapy with my patients, either by Zoom or by phone. But not the same as being in the same room and breathing the same air and looking at each other at close range. And same thing with just any kind of relationship. It's just not, you have to really feel the person. You know, you have to be aware of all their little body movements, body language, and things that you totally miss, certainly on the phone and even on Zoom.
What are some of the feel-good responses that are triggered in the brain when an individual is in the physical company of a person or people they admire, compared to the feel-good responses in the brain when an individual is engrossed in their electronic devices?
When you're in the physical company of a person, usually there's hugging, there's smiling. You can see the person smile. They're not covered. Normally, they're not covered by a mask. Handshakes, hugs, pats on the back, things like that. And on social media, it's like saccharin. You know, it's like fake sugar instead of the real thing.
At the end of the film, they encourage us, if we're not going to delete our social media accounts altogether, they recommend at least disabling notifications. Do you have any other recommendations for people who are feeling the anxiety produced by social media?
Well, we have become like Pavlov's dogs. You know, you hear a little thing, whether it's an email coming in or a text or, you know, whatever the sound is that notifies you of something, we have a reaction now. Oh, we have to go look at that. Who could that be? Maybe that's some opportunity or somebody saying something nice to us. And that is really, we have to deprogram ourselves from that. And we have to really, I mean, first of all, parents need to be very watchful of their kids, certainly not allowing cell phones or any kind of device to be in the bedroom at night and cutting it off a couple of hours before bedtime so that people aren't still looking for a response when it's time to go to bed. There should be limits to the amount of time that you allow kids to be on the phone. You take the phone and you put it somewhere. I mean, it's really, it's discipline. It's being a parent. And for adults, we kind of have to do that for ourselves to not keep it so close to us all the time. We have to take breaks from it.
I've been speaking with Dr. Carol Lieberman, a board-certified psychiatrist with a master's in public health, about the new Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma, and what that's doing to our mental health. Dr. Lieberman, thank you so much for chatting with me today. If someone feels like they need professional help regarding this, where can they go?
I'll give you my website. It's drcarole.com, which is drcarole.com. Or it, just for general, you know, one can find therapists online these days. I mean, you know, not just online to find them, but who are doing, just like I do, who are doing therapy online and by phone. I suggest Googling a therapist near you, though, near enough to you, so that when this is all over, that you could actually go in person to them.
Dr. Lieberman, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
You're very welcome.